So I also have no disclosures. So most of us are probably familiar with the social ecology model that tells us that health is related not only to our own individual behaviors, but also to the social and physical environments that we might live in, work in, play in. And so what I'm particularly interested in, we talked about some school issues, but I'm interested in the relationship that parenting practices have on the development of children's eating behaviors. And so the obesity proneness model was developed by psychologists Costanzo and Woody back in 1985, and actually they developed this model to describe how parenting behaviors can be influenced by child characteristics, the children's characteristics. And they use this model to illustrate their propositions. And what they say is that parents will become concerned about their child's weight when they perceive that their child is becoming overweight, and also if they value weight highly. And that they'll also be more concerned about their daughter's weight because of the societal impact and influence of women's weight. And so when parents are concerned about their child's weight, they're more likely to institute these restrictive feeding practices, withholding food, certain foods from children, and therefore the children aren't able to learn how to regulate their own eating behaviors. They're dependent on their parent to tell them how much to eat and what they can eat. And in addition, when their parents are concerned about their weight, the child's weight, they might also make weight-directed comments to the child, and then the child can internalize the parent's concern about their weight. So what Costanzo and Woody says is now you have a child who is concerned about their weight but doesn't know how to regulate their eating, and it produces this sort of eating guilty behavior. And some of us in this room might have experienced this kind of feeling in the past where you feel like, I know that I need to lose weight, I'm worried about my weight, but I can't seem to control my eating. And so Costanzo and Woody says, it's all our parents' fault. And so what this study adds, and several people have studied major components of this model since 1985, and they've been able to show some links between each of those models' constructs. But what this study adds is looking at the entire model simultaneously. By using structural equation modeling, we can measure all of the relationships in the model at the same time. And other studies typically have surveyed parents, usually mothers, about their feeding practices and their child's eating behaviors. And we know that there's a difference in what parents say they do and what parents believe, what parents' beliefs are, and what the adolescents think their parents believe or do. And some studies have shown actually that where parenting, when you interview parents or survey parents, that their beliefs are not related to the child's eating behaviors, whereas the child's beliefs about what their parents do are related to the child's eating behaviors. So we did a survey. We used the Modified Youth Risk Behavior Survey in one county in Florida, Sarasota County in Florida. We administered this survey to 9th and 11th grade classrooms, but we collected data from 10th and 12th graders as well because they were these classrooms had 10th and 12th graders in them. And overall, we had 1,964 surveys submitted. So the YRBS, as we've heard, is an instrument that was developed by the CDC. It's a school-based, school-administered survey that looks at health risk behaviors. And the county that administered the survey used 78, I think, of CDC's 87 core items and then added another 27 or so items that they were interested in measuring. And so for this study, we looked at four of those standard YRBS items like height and weight and age and gender, and then 14 of those that were added by the school district. And these items were pilot tested with high school students and underwent face validity check with a panel of experts. And so the data set was split into two random samples. Sample A was used to test and modify the models, and then sample B was used to validate the models that were developed. And also, just to note, one of the questions asked, since we were interested in parenting practices, we were asking youth to report about their parents, in this case their mother's, practices. And so we told students to think about a woman that was very influential in their lives and gave them suggestions. This could be your mother, stepmother, grandmother. And then we asked students to let us know who they were answering the questions about, which one of those women. And so we selected only those students who were reporting about their mother. And then we ran standard univariate demographic kind of procedures. We used SPSS to determine scale reliabilities. And then we used M plus to do the structural equation modeling. And this process involves two steps. Step one, if any of you are familiar with confirmatory factor analysis, step one is very much like CFA, where we're looking to see how well our survey items are measuring the constructs. And then step two is where we test the full model, testing the structural model. And so when I present the results, I'm going to just show you the demographics and then show you the results of step one and then step two. So after cleaning the data and selecting only those students who were responding about the mother, we had 1,533 cases that we analyzed. And so you see there sample A and sample B. And remember, sample A is what we use to test the models and modify the models, and sample B is what we use to cross-validate the models. And you see that our sample was slightly more female than male, ages between about 14 and 17, and there were no differences between the samples. Sarasota County is a largely white population, and this is reflected by our data. And you'll see those that reported being overweight or obese, and we calculated the percent body mass index using the height and weight charts for children based on the self-reported height and weight and their age. And you'll see that those reporting overweight and obese were slightly lower than our national average of overweight and obesity. And so this is the data from step one. And the items in bold here, those are the names of our constructs. And these figures are the scale reliabilities, or Cronbach alphas. And these are basically just telling us how well the items, the survey items, are. It's sort of like a correlation of the survey items, how well they're correlated. And typically we like to see Cronbach's alpha of 0.6 or 0.7 or above. That's generally considered acceptable in social science research. So you see we have relatively high Cronbach's alphas in both sample A, where we tested the model, and then sample B, where we validated it. And then under each of these, we have the actual survey items and that we're measuring each construct. And these are the item-to-factor correlations, or you might be used to hearing those terms, factor loadings. And you'll see that these are also very high. Normally, we like to see a minimum of three survey items. for each construct, but because we were adding items to a survey, we were limited in how many items we could add. So you'll see a concern about weight and inability to self-regulate eating, those are our two outcome variables. And when we, our final model, we had two items that were indicators of concern about weight and one item that was an indicator of inability to self-regulate eating, two items for perceived maternal comments about weight, and then two items for each of the other constructs in the model, perceived maternal restrictive feeding practices, perceived maternal concern about weight, and perceived maternal values about weight. But you see, we have high Cronbach's alphas and item-to-factor correlations for each of these samples. And this is just an indicator of how well that model fit. And these are our cutoff values. So we would like to see a TLI of at least 0.95 and an RMSEA of less than 0.05 to 0.08. And you see here we meet these criteria. So this is just telling us that this is a good and acceptable measurement model. So this is our final structural equation model. And it's now we're viewing this from the adolescence perspective instead of the original model that we were looking at. And so this is the squares or the rectangles and ovals are consistent with path diagram notation, where the ovals represent constructs that are those constructs that were measured by two or more items, and then these items in the rectangles are just variables that are measured by one item. And the arrows suggest causal pathways, where the item on the left of the arrow is supposedly causing the item to the right of the arrow. And wherever there's a double-headed arrow, that would show a correlational path where one item's not causing the other. And so we tested this model, and the first time we ran it, we didn't come up with acceptable model fit statistics. So what we did is we looked to see if there were any of these pathways that were not statistically significant that we could remove, but indeed all of them were statistically significant. So we left them in the model, and then we looked at modification indices that are suggested by the M plus output that suggested adding some additional paths. So finally, what we ended up doing was adding four paths. And so the first path was this link here between adolescents' perceptions of how the mother views their weight. Do they think their mother thinks they're overweight? And our study found that adolescents were more likely to believe that their mothers valued weight if they also believed that their mothers thought they were overweight. We also found this relationship between gender and adolescents' own concern about their weight, where, as you would expect, girls were more concerned about their weight than boys. And we also found this path here that adolescents were more likely to think their mothers made comments about their weight if they thought their mothers thought they were overweight, which intuitively makes sense. And then, interestingly, we found this correlational pathway between our two outcome variables, which was consistent with what Costanzo and Woody were proposing back in 1985 and calling this sort of combination of behaviors that eating guilty. And this should actually be the structural model fit, not the measurement model fit, but we see here also that in sample A and sample B, we meet our cutoff criteria for being an acceptable model. And then when we look at all of these relationships individually, they were all statistically significant. Some were stronger than others. And so the strongest relationships we saw were between perceived maternal values about weight and perceived maternal concern about weight. And interestingly, this relationship is really, to my knowledge, this might be the first time that anybody's actually studied this relationship. Some researchers combine these two ideas, values and concern, into one single construct called parental investment in shape. But in this case, we see that those two constructs are related. A strong relationship between perceived maternal concern about weight and perceived maternal restrictive feeding practice. This is what we see consistently in the literature, that mothers, parents are more likely to restrict their child's feeding if they are concerned about their child's weight. This is another relationship that I'm not aware has been studied before. Actually making comments about the child's weight if you're concerned about the child's weight. I don't know that that's been studied before. And then this relationship was also very strong, showing a link between perceived maternal comments and the child's concern, the child's own concern about their weight. And this also has been reported in the literature previously. And then finally, like I said, all of these were statistically significant. These were the strongest relationships. And then the last one that was also relatively strong was this relationship here between gender and concern about weight, where girls are more concerned about their weight than boys. So we have to be careful in how we interpret this data. Even though those arrows suggest a causal pathway, this was a cross-sectional study, and so we can only say that those relationships are correlational because this wasn't a temporal study. It was a non-probability sample, so we have to be careful in generalizing these results to other populations. We were reliant on self-reported data, but as we know, a lot of times these data can give us a true indication of reality. And then we were sort of reliant on existing survey data. We would have liked to have had at least three items measuring each construct, but we were limited to what we could add. But again, just to point out the strengths, we did look at adolescents' perspective. We do believe that the adolescents are going to act on what they believe their parents are doing, not what the parents say that they're doing. And this is probably the first time that the entire model was tested simultaneously. And so just to conclude, if we want to try to avoid this eating guilty behavior that might ultimately lead to complicate obesity, then we should probably try to be working with parents to make sure that they don't make weight-directed comments. And to, instead of restricting their child's intake, to offer healthy foods and allow the child to learn to choose from those healthy alternatives. So, any questions?
Please. Isn't it slightly problematic that you have that big arrow between sex and concerns? Because that means that there's a huge part of the variance there that is not explained by the mediation relationship, and it's unexplained. So at least it's saying that the model is not comprehensive in explaining the variance of your outcome parameter, right? So when you add all this mediation, that direct relationship should disappear.
I only looked at the direct effects, so yeah, I honestly can't tell you. I'll have to look at that further. Yeah.
When the Surgeon General's report on smoking and health, I don't know why they called it smoking and health, it should have been smoking and disease, came out, the University of Illinois did a number of studies about what predicts future cigarette smoking. And they found that there was one question that seemed to predict whether or not an individual was going to be a smoker in the future. And it was simply, do you think that you'll be a smoker in the future? My question is, did you find any single question that might be a predisposing factor for whether or not the child thought he or she was going to become obese? Or did you look at that at all?
Yeah, I wasn't really looking to see if the child thought they would become obese.
Now, they were fortunate and they could follow the sample of kids, and they found out that the one question, do you think in 5 years you'll be a smoker? And they followed them, and they found a huge correlation between a yes or a no answer and whether or not the child became a smoker. And nobody's looked at that. So you may have something in your data. Please.
I'm just wondering what the research suggests about breaking the cycle for those who either are adults and were taught or, you know, perceived that their parents found that this was, that weight was a value or that there was a value association with that, or parents who are trying to change their approach to, and the kids have already perceived some value attached to that. What is the, is there any research on how breaking that cycle sort of, or reversing that?
I'm not familiar with that research. I do know that what is recommended is offering your children healthy foods and teaching them to choose from those alternatives. You know, not pressuring them to eat, and also not restricting them either, but rather just to offer the foods and let them select. And that gives, so the parent has some responsibility in providing the healthy alternatives, but then the child, you leave the child responsible for making the choice from those alternatives.
Because it feels like so many of us are so screwed up. You know,
believe me, I wonder how badly I've screwed up my own kids.
I know, exactly. That's what I'm thinking. Yeah. I guess I just have to start over.
Why are you so fat? Other questions for any of our panelists? Yes, please.
Have any prior research studies really investigated this with a younger sample?
Actually, a lot of the studies have looked at a younger sample. Most have, as I mentioned, surveyed the mothers and asked the mothers about their own practices, but then about their children's eating behaviors. And in some cases, some very good studies have actually observed children's eating behaviors. And then there are one or two studies that I'm aware of that have actually surveyed or interviewed younger children as well. Yes.